Thanks for downloading ThistlePod. I'm Fiona Ritchie, and our podcasts take us back into our NPR programme archive to remember some of the visits I've enjoyed with artists who helped define the sound of the music we care about. This time, a man whose music and message became universal. Travel with me about 60 miles north of New York City to a modest log home near the banks of the River Hudson. Spending an afternoon there is an experience etched in my memory. Let me share some of it with you now as we remember a remarkable human being, Pete Seeger.
The main thing I've tried to do is to demonstrate to people that it's fun to sing together. It's true that this a good solo singer is unforgettable, but it's also unforgettable if you can get a crowd of people who may never have met each other before and find that they have fun singing together. And they surprise themselves at how good it sounds. I've done this first with children 70 years ago, and then later on with college students 60 years ago. And now I cannot sing very well myself, but I try and find songs that people can sing if all I do is give them the accompaniment. Hmm. And sometimes the words. In church they call this lining out the hymn. I'll give a few words and they sing the verses as well as the chorus.
When you talk about sharing music with children now, sometimes it's something that has to be introduced to children because they maybe don't have it in their family and they're maybe not surrounded by it. But for you, you grew up, you would have heard music and song as early as you heard people conversing.
Well, my parents were both classical musicians. My mother was a very good violinist, and for her, the three B's were Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. I think I counted by saying, Mother, for me, it's boats, banjos, and biscuits. Others, another time I said, ballads, blues, and breakdowns. However, it was actually a Scotsman who went to Canada as a child and became a famous writer of books about nature. And he was my guru as a child, Ernest Thompson Seton, S-E-T-O-N. And I read every single one of his books. And when I was 16, I announced to the family, my mother was teaching violin to a Jewish family. They said, what are you going to do with your life? You're 16. I said, well, I'm going to be a hermit in this hypocritical world. That's the only way to be an honest person. And they said, that's your idea of morality? You're going to be nice and pure yourself and let the rest of the world go to hell. And I thought it over and decided they were right, and I got more involved, made lots of mistakes. But I do think that to try and be a hermit now, you can do it occasionally for a short period of time. But by and large, if this world is still here in 100 years, it will be people who somehow find a community they like to work with and work with other people. Michael Rowe.
Hudson's River is deep and wide.
Musical influences that you can recall?
Oh, I played in the school jazz band. I wanted to be like my teenage peers. So I went clunk, 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 clunk on a tenor banjo, playing the chords which were written down in the sheet music. But I really didn't enjoy it that much. It put me in touch with my peers for a while. But at age 17, my father took me to a festival in Asheville, North Carolina, and I heard ordinary working people making fantastically good music. They didn't play many kinds of music, they just played the kind they knew. And I'll never forget a woman in her 50s named Samantha Bumgarner from a small town in eastern Tennessee. And she'd come over the mountains to sing at this festival. The man in charge of the festival was a lawyer, but he actually became a very good showman. He would have only one mic on stage right and another mic on stage left, maybe 30 feet away. It was a broad stage. And he'd have spotlights on stage right, and there a band would be playing. While they were playing, he would go over to stage left and get another band out and group them around the mic. Says, now you know what you're going to play? You know what key you're in? Are you all in tune? Now the moment the spotlight hits you, you start playing. But don't play until the spotlight hits you. Now he walks back to stage right, and the band there is finishing up, and he leads to the audience in the applause. Give a hand to the Coon Creek Boys, and aren't they wonderful? And then he would walk across the stage 30 feet and the spotlight would follow him. He says, now here are the Smith Hollow gang and they're going to take over. So he had a fast-moving show back and forth from stage right to stage left. Bascom Lamar Lunsford, he gave me my first lesson in playing a five-string banjo. Instead of going and just playing chords, clunk, 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 you pick up on maybe the middle string and then pick up on the first string, five notes higher, and then come down with your thumb on the fifth string. And then I didn't learn this all at once, I learned you pick one of the strings with your left hand. So now I could get four beats there. Up with your middle string, pluck the first string with your left hand. My mother says on the violin that's called left-hand pizzicato. I just call it pulling off. But you know, my phrase has been picked up by the whole music world now. Guitar pickers all around the world, that's pulling off when you play a note with your left hand. And sometimes you can, instead of pulling off on, you can hammer down on one of the strings, usually a lower string. You pick it with your right hand and then come down strongly on the fretboard with your left hand. and the string is still vibrating in the new pitch. And of course, a man named Earl Scruggs invented a way to divide up 8 short notes into 3, 3, and 2. That adds up to 8. And if you analyze it, that's basically the rumba rhythm.
I courted pretty Polly the livelong night. I courted pretty Polly the livelong night, and left her next morning before it was light. Pretty Polly, come go along with me. Pretty Polly, come go along with me. Before we get married, some pleasure to see. He led her over hills and the valleys so deep. He led her over hills and the valleys so deep, until pretty Polly, she commenced to weep.
You must have collected a lot of scraps and pieces of songs and tunes when you were travelling around the world, and when you made that first trip down to Appalachia, down to Asheville, and met that great song collector, or great tune collector as well, Baskerville, Marr Lunsford, and Alan Lomax, in fact.
I'm afraid I was not that well organised. I just hit upon something that sounded nice and tried to imitate it. Baskerville, Marr Lunsford was a very conservative man. He said, this folk music, it was all right until Seeger got connected with it. He did not approve of me, even though he gave me my first lesson on the instrument. The man who should be remembered was the son of old John Lomax, who collected cowboy songs. I think that the word folk music was invented about 150 years ago in Europe, meant the music of the peasant class, ancient and anonymous. Well, around the year 1900, a young man studying at the University of Texas on his vacations liked to sit around a campfire with a pencil and paper writing down the words that the cowboys were singing. His professor said, oh, this is just doggerel, throw this away, you're wasting your time. But a year later, up at Harvard, Professor Kittredge said, oh, this is very interesting. This is American folk music. So John Lomax picked up the term. These were not ancient songs. They were not all anonymous. Some of them were, but not all. And in 1907, he brought out a book, Cowboy Songs, and got President Theodore Roosevelt to write a short foreword saying, these are good songs, people ought to sing them. Whereas in Europe, they would say, oh, you're not authentic. This is only to be sung by a peasant. But here in democratic America, John now encouraged people to sing these songs. And although he made a living working in a bank, whenever he could take a week or two off, he would pile his family into a car and they'd visit a singing family wherever they could find one. The Ritchie family is a singing family in Kentucky, but he found other similar families in Texas or wherever. Sometimes he reached out through the newspapers. It's 300 miles from Albany to Buffalo. He wrote a letter to every small town newspaper along those 300 miles, said, is there anybody who knows some of the canal songs sung 30 years ago before they motorized the Erie Canal? The canal barges were pulled by mules, and the man had to walk behind the mules. And, well, he got numerous letters from people, said, oh, my Uncle John, he worked at the canal when he was young. He can sing you some of these songs. And so he had a batch of very good canal songs in his next book, American Ballads and Folk Songs, 1934. And that was when his younger son said, "Father, I'd like to carry on your work." Well, Alan took over this at age 22. His father called him the acting curator. His father was the curator, the man with the reputation. But his 20-year-old son, and he, with the confidence of youth and energy, did in 6 years what most men would have taken a lifetime to do. He'd call up the head of CBS Radio, Mr. Paley. "You have a Symphony of the Air, the Columbia Symphony, and you have a School of the Air. I think you should have devote 1 year to telling the American people about American folk music. I'll write the programs and I can introduce the singers. And after the singers have sung, we'll have a composer like Aaron Copland write the same melody played for the 60 instruments of the symphony orchestra." And if he couldn't find an old sailor who knew the song, he'd interview the author of the book, Joanna Colcord, Songs of American Sailormen. She was a teenager, and her father was captain of the boat, and she and her family sailed on a whaling ship, and she also took out pencil and paper, and years later came out with a nice book. So he said, "Pete, learn this song." I think I was 19 or 20. "'Tis advertised in Boston, New York, and Buffalo. 500 brave Americans a-whaling for to go, singing blow, you winds of the morning, blow, you winds, hi-ho. Clear away your running gear and blow, blow, blow." And six or eight verses going on. "A winding glass around we'll pass and damn this blubber whaling."
When you go to work, well, you work like the devil. At the end of the week, you're not on the level. Payday comes, you ain't got a penny, cause when you pay your bills, you got so many. I'm gonna starve and everybody will, cause you can't make a living in a cotton mill.
From our radio archives, a visit with the late Pete Seeger. I'm Fiona Ritchie. I'll share more of our afternoon together in my next podcast, and I know you'll want to join me for that too. At thistleradio.com, you'll find a playlist of This Thistle Pod. NPR's The Thistle and Shamrock airs radio like this each week. Find out how to tune in to public radio or hear our music channel and web streams at thistleradio.com. Join me on Twitter at Fiona Ritchie. You'll find a Thistle Radio page on Facebook. Thanks for joining me.